Welcome to Shir Avinu B'chai, Parshas Korach. Wanted to start with two separate Avinu B'chai's that interlink, and Avinu B'chai says something which is hinted at in other Rishonim, but he really speaks it out to a much fuller extent, and the shtickle that he says really gives us an insight into how far-reaching the rebellion of Korach actually was. Again, you know, we realize that Korach was, again, Adam Gadol, as we know. The people who attached themselves to Korach, by and large, were great people. But the extent of how great they were is brought out in the following comment by Rabbeinu B'chayim. So I want to take a look at the very end of Perek Tezayin Pasuk Aleph, the first piece that Rabbeinu B'chayim has in the parasha, Vayikach Korach, in the, if you have the Chevelle edition, it's the bottom of page Kuf Yud in the Chevelle edition. And again, if you don't have the Chevelle edition, towards the end of that long piece, it's maybe the last couple of lines, where he says as follows: "Umichlau chamishu masayim elu hayu shneimasar hanesiim shekrivu b'chanukas hamizbeach." We know that there were 250 chashuv of people, right? The pasuk describes them as Nisiei Eido Kriye Moed Anshe Shem, which loosely translated means Chashuv of people. Right? 250 people, Rashi and Chazal referred to them as Rashi Sanhedros. They were heads of the Sanhedrin. Again, very, very Chashuv of people who attached themselves to Korach. But the Rabbeinu B'chai writes, they weren't just stab Chashuv of people. They were the very same Nisiim that we read about at the end of Parshas Naso. Right? Nasi Echad Layom, Nasi Echad Layom, you know, each of the days, the first 12 days of Nisan, a different Nasi brings his Karban. Those 12 Nisiyim were part of the 250, says Rabbeinu B'chayim. Oh, so we'll talk about that in just a minute, right? The Chen Darshu Chazal, Chazal say similarly, Migzeira Shava, Kriye Kriye. Chazal bring this from a Gzeira Shava, from the word Kriye, that appears twice. Ksiv Hacha Nisiyah Eidot Kriye Moed, Uksiv B'midbar Sinai, and it says at the very beginning of Sefer B'midbar, Eilot Kriye Ha'idah Nisiyah Matos Avosam. When it lists off the names of the Nisiyim at the very beginning of B'midbar, it also uses the term Kriye Ha'idah. Right? So we see, just as over there it's the Nisiyim, over here it's the Nisiyim as well. Where is this Gzeira Shava? So if you look at Rabbi Chevelle in his notes in 60, he has an extensive note where he writes, Gzeira Shava Zu Huva B'Tanchuma Korach U'Med V'Shrava, right? The Gzeira Shava Kriye is brought in Midrashim. Avalom Avur Shom B'Feirish Eim HaShneim Asar Nesiyim Ela Kenir HaKavana. The Medrash is not 100% explicit that it's the 12 Nesiyim who are being referred to over here, but it does seem as if the Medrash is saying that. Rabbeinu B'chai for sure is saying that the Feirish. And the Rabbi Chevelle then goes down to quote the Pirush Mahar Zu on the Medrash from the Rezev of Ofar, where he says as follows: Al Karkecha, it's not all 12 Nesiyim. At most, it's 10 of the Nesiyim. Because Nachshon ben Aminadov, it's not Shaykh that he was among that group that would have aligned themselves with Korach. And what's more, Shlumiel ben Surishadoi, the Nasi of Shimon, according to Chazal, is none other than Zimri ben Salu, who appears later on in a not so wonderful context either, right, at the end of Parshas Balak. But you know, certainly he seems to have survived the you know, earlier events with the destruction of Korach. So Rabbi Chevelle even goes so far as to suggest that maybe the proper Girsa Rabbeinu B'chaye is not Shneimasar HaNesiyim, but Asara HaNesiyim. That we're talking about 10 out of the Nesiyim, two of them apparently were not involved. Whether one accepts that change in Girsa, I mean, one can make a much smaller change in gears and still get the same idea, namely that from
that Michlal Chamishim Osayim Elu Hayu Mishne Masar HaNesiim, that, you know, with perhaps two exceptions, the other of the 12 Nesiim, 10 out of the 12 Nesiim, participated in the rebellion of Korach. And the truth is, you know, putting aside Zereshavas and all of that, when you think about it, on a certain level, maybe that's just the Pashut of Pshat in the Pasuk. Right? Who were the Masayim Ish? Nesiei Eda. Kriyei Moed Anshei Shem. Forget about Kriyei Moed. Nesiei Eda. I think normally we translate Nesiei Eda as just Chashev of people, you know, great people among the congregation, but literally Nesiei Eda means the Nesiim, right? So even though you can read the Pasuk a million times and it can never quite dawn on you that the very same people that we read with great pomp and circumstance on every day of Hanukkah, talking about the Hanukkah Samizbeah, basically all of them, you know, 10 out of 12 of them joined the rebellion of Korah, nonetheless, Rabbi Ruchai is pointing out that certainly in Chazal and maybe in the Pasuk as well, that horrific event is actually true. The Chaim Pirush Rashi's out. This may be in Rashi as well, where at the very end of Rashi on the first Pasuk, where he talks about Dasan Va'avira, a long Rashi, right? So at the end of that Rashi, he writes that the 250 men, Ruban Mishavet Ruvein, Behem Elitsur Ben Shteyur V'chaveiro V'chayotzeba. This includes Elitsur Ben Shteyur, who is the Nasi of Reuven, V'chaveiro, and his chaveiro. So who are his chaveiro? So Rabbi B'chai wants to time it that the word V'chaveiro means his colleagues in the Nasius, right? The other Nasiim. Ha'anashim asher nikvu b'shemos. Right, the people who were singled out at the beginning of Sefer Bamidbar. Now the truth is, you can read Rashi differently. I mean, Rashi in context is talking about how the majority of the 250 men came from Shevet Reuven, Elitzur ben Shteyur v'chaveirov, meaning his chaveirim from Shevet Reuven. Right, in other words, the other chashuv of people in Reuven. There were other such people, presumably. It could go either way. In other words, not clear in Rashi what he means, but Rabbeinu B'chai clearly understands Rashi to mean, like he's explained before, that the majority of the Nesiim participated in the rebellion of Korach. The Afalpi Shelo Pirsumam HaKosuv. So even though the Torah is very quiet about this really horrific fact that the Nesiim were involved in rebelling against Moshe Rabbeinu, Nasan Simoneim Mitocha Mekomos HaTomei V'Nosam. There are hints at this in the Chumash, and if you know how to read between the lines, you'll pick up on the fact that the Nesiim were involved in this rebellion. Now this is fascinating. If it's really true that the Nesiim, by and large, were involved in this rebellion, how is it that the Torah is just, you know, giving you little hints here and there, in the CAA, though, you know, Xerah Shava, but never quite coming out with Feirish and saying the very same Nesiim who were makriv their karbonos and Nasa turned around and betrayed Moshe Rabbeinu? How can that be? So he goes on to write something very, very beautiful. Moshe ben Tovim Shagonav Kelu de Samerchos. Right? Once happened, a nice guy from a nice family went and he stole some towels from the bathhouse, or some clothing from the bathhouse. Florosa Bala Gnevel of Farsuma. And the owner of the bathhouse, who had been ripped off, knew who did it. But he didn't want to get this kid into trouble. He's a good kid. He comes from a good family, you know. You have, you know, Amol, you have a kid, for whatever reason, you know, gets into some kind of trouble. So what? You want to destroy him? You want to, you know, bang him into the ground? Or whatever. You want him to admit his mistake and do tshuva and pay you back and then move on. You know, we can all move on. Hiskel nosen simonim. Right? So instead of coming out straight and, you know, lodging a complaint and saying Chaim was the one who stole it, he starts giving these clues and hints. Amrulo mi gonaves keilecha. The police come and they ask the owner of the bathhouse, no, so who's responsible for the theft? Amar lohem oso ben tovim bal koma shinov no soro shachar chot monor. You know, that good looking handsome tall guy who comes from a nice family. I don't want to say who it is.
right? Mishnasim Simon of Yadu Mihu.
They figure out who it is, but he didn't say, and in you know, not giving it away, he also paid the fellow a compliment. Now, the marshal, just to understand the marshal, presumably they still catch the guy, right? They know who it is, and he's presumably still punished, right? But at least, you know, they try as much as possible to downplay, to not be mefarse, you know, the terrible crime which is committed.
Afkan, afopish lo pirsim avol pirish mosam mitok simonem ato yodea mihem.
Here too, the perfidy of the Nesiim is in the Chumash, but you have to read between the lines. The Torah is not going to come out and tell you b'feirish. And here comes the beautiful line.
Finei zeh midarchei ha-Torah, shekol d'rochei darchei noam, shepirsumum eitzel ha-mitzvah v'azchus b'chanukas ha-mizbeach, v'kan eitzel ha-peronos istiron.
This is the derech of Torah. The Torah is d'rochei darchei noam, the Torah is the Torah of pleasantness. Here you have people who did a tremendous mitzvah and have a tremendous schus going for them, and also did a tremendous aveira. You know, they started out with Moshe Rabbeinu. It doesn't really get much worse than that. It's pretty bare. That's pretty bare. And yet, we lay what they did every single Hanukkah, and we mefarsem their mitzvos and their schusim. And when it comes to the fact that they were, you know, buddies with Korach, we gloss that over. And that's the right way to do it, because the Torah has mercy, the Torah has compassion, and the Torah wants these people to live on forever and ever because of the good things that they did, and not to be associated with this terrible, terrible mistake that they made, you know, at the very end of their lives. Right, so I would say the answer to each of those questions is different for each of those points. Nadav and Avihu, bekrovai ekodesh, in other words, whatever they did wrong, and they clearly did something wrong, but at the same time, the fact that they were chosen to be taken in such a way is on some level an indication of their tzidkus. Bekrovai ekodesh, right? So, Nadav and Avihu, I think, is a special case. What's that?
The same thing with the 250.
Right, but the sin of partnering with Korach, I think, is a more severe sin. In other words, whatever Nadav and Avihu do, and again, the pasuk itself is not even 100% clear. Chazal has, you know, five different interpretations of what they did. It was a mistake, but a mistake that was a mistake of great people, whatever Nadav and Avihu did. They were shtuye yayin because they wanted to get close to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They, you know, they desired for Moshe and Aaron to die and for them to lead the people because they thought they would do a good job leading the people. It was a L'shem Shamayim mistake. Now again, the worst kinds of mistakes, as we know, are the L'shem Shamayim mistakes. Right? That's somebody says, you know, they're 100% L'shem Shamayim, sometimes you have to get very, very nervous when people say that. But because another Avihu, it was a holy Aveira, whatever they did exactly. The Meraglim were great people, but they didn't have that schus of bringing karbonos for the Chanukah Samizbeach. That's a gewaldige schus, and we're going to talk about that a little bit more, Rabbeinu Bechai, in a few moments. You know, that whatever greatness the Meraglim had was outshadowed by their terrible error in what they did as the Meraglim. And what was the other example that she had? And Zimri ben Salo as well. I mean, again, it's yeah, right, but you notice that the Torah changes his name, right? And that's for the purposes of telling all the bad things that he did. You know, we only know through Chazal that he's Shlumiel ben Surishado, you know, so there's a certain cover-up, so to speak, that goes on over there as well. But here, the amazing schus that they had for being involved in Chanukah HaMizbeach was something that was so overwhelming that causes the Torah to want to cover over the fact that they were involved in the rebellion of Korach. Right, Nachshon Aminadab was not part of it. And Zimri, right? Those are the two that stood out. Interesting.
It's funny that even like the
theme
of let's say
Yisachar, right?
Right.
Right. So that goes back to a point which is made in other contexts.
let's not think for a moment that Korach was the quintessential bad guy. Chas v'shalom. Korach had levels of tzidkus and kedusha that were extraordinary as well. It was he was a great man, Korach. Right. He was a great man who made a very tragic error over here, right? But he was a great man. Ad kedekach that these 250 people, including the Nesi'im by and large, felt that Korach was right. Right? I mean, it underscores something about the machlokes, which we don't always think about. This really was the two sides were formidable sides. It was not Pasha at that side that to join Korach was clearly rejecting the Ribbono Shel Olam and rejecting his Torah. It was easy for even great men to be, to be swept along with the ideas of Korach.
Do we know how many people were not
sucking
into this?
I don't know. From the psukim, you get the impression it was those leaders, and that was it.
That was it.
That's the impression that you get. Right.
The
rank and file.
What?
The rank and file.
Yeah.
I don't know. You don't get that impression from the Chumash. You get the impression that was a separate tluna which they had. But be that as it may. So in other words, these Nesi'im themselves, the majority of the Nesi'im, are involved in the rebellion of Korach. There's maybe even a little hint to the names of one of the people, at least Elitzur ben Shteyur. What's Elitzur ben Shteyur? Kimeis Hatzur from the Rach from Hashem Hushlach Aleim Eish. Shteyur is really two words: Shadi to throw and Ur fire. Right. So God threw fire upon these 250 men, who included the Nesi'im, Elitzur ben Shteyur. Okay, it's a remes. It's a little bit of a hint. What's that? Right, but he's interpreting it as shavi, that he, like the Aramaic word that he threw upon them. Along those lines, that the Nesi'im were included in the 250 men, Rabbeinu Bechai, a little bit later, goes on to say again something really striking to explain the psukim in a very unusual way. A little bit later on in Pasuk Tesvav, it says, "Vayichar Moshe Ma'od." Moshe got very upset. "Vayomer al Hashem al Teifen al Minchasam." He says to the Ribbono Shel Olam, "Don't turn to their mincha, to their korban, which they are going to bring. I know they are going to bring a korban. You, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, don't accept it. Who is they, and which korban are they bringing exactly?" Right. So Rebbeinu Bechaye brings that Rashi Piresh Al Teifen Al Menchasim Haktores Shem Akrivim Lefanecha Machar Al Teifen Eileha. When these 250 men bring their Ktores, their incense, before you tomorrow, Hashem, please don't listen to it. So Nira Shaddai Tokim Menchasim Adasim Vaviram Yachsa. Right, it would seem from Rashi that the people he has in mind are Dasan and Aviram. In other words, Dasan and Aviram had just spoken to Moshe the few psukim before. So Hashem says concerning Dasan and Aviram, don't listen to them. V'chein da'as ha-Ramban. V'imkein yesh l'sh'ol. But that's very perplexing, says Rabbeinu Bechaye. Lama yisrael Moshe aleim levadam, ki heim lo hayu ikar. Why would Moshe Rabbeinu David that Dasan and Aviram, of all people, should not be listened to? Dasan and Aviram were a small part of the rebellion against Moshe Rabbeinu. Also, what schus did Dasan Aviram have that Moshe Rabbeinu was so afraid of them? Why did he think? What was the Havamina? That HaKadosh Baruch Hu would listen to Dasan and Aviram were it not for Moshe davening that he shouldn't. Why do you sing about Dasan and Aviram? I mean, everybody, the 250 men, were all bringing Ktoris. Al kein nirali lo markim in chasam yachzor l'nesiyim ala karbon shehikrivu b'chanukas hamizbeach kol echon mehem ka'ara u'mizrok shneim aleim soles b'lulo b'shemen l'mincha. is the tam min chasam. Says Rabbi B'chai beautifully. He says al teifen am min chasam. What does that mean? It means don't let the schus of the nesiim who brought all of those karbanos for the Chanukah's hamizbeach at the end of Parshas Nasa, including what? Including an actual mincha. I mean, mincha is a funny word. Mincha can mean karbon generically, it means a gift. But mincha also specifically, as we know, refers to a flower offering. Part of what the Nesiim brought was a flower offering. Right? Ketores is not usually referred to as a mincha. A flower offering is a mincha. So says the Rabbeinu B'chai, Moshe Rabbeinu turns to the Ribbono Shel Olam and says, Al teifen al minchasam. I know that these Nesiim have a gevaldige zchus that what? That they brought karbonos for the Chanukah Samizbeach back in Parshas Naso. And that zchus is so incredible that maybe that zchus would actually outweigh my zchus. So Ribbono Shel Olam, I'm davening to you, Al teifen al minchasam. Ignore that which they brought before and stick up for me, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Umoshe lo chashash yispal al dasan v'avira. Shlo yu ikar. He wasn't concerned about dasan v'avira. V'lo nodu la'am z'chus. Right? That didn't bother him. He didn't think dasan v'avira were going to beat him out. Ach yispal al hanesiyim shem ikar chamishu masayim. He was really worried about the Nesiyim because again, of the 250 men, the Nesiyim were the most prominent. And the Elohim schus godo biomachanika. And they had this tremendous schus going for them. Hutzrach lisfalishal tamud lohem schus also karbon vishiyichlu ba'ansham. So he felt the need to daven that the schus of the Chanukah Samizbeach would not stand them in good stead, and that instead HaKadosh Baruch Hu should back Moshe Rabbeinu. Again, consistent with what he says that the Nesiim, 10 out of 12 of the Nesiim at least, were part of the 250 men. These were great men, extraordinary men. You know, the schus of the Chanukah Samizbeach, Moshe Rabbeinu was mamish, is concerned that that's going to outweigh whatever schus of Moshe Rabbeinu himself is able to bring to the table. Right, right. So, right. So you can't. Yeah, ain't nothing on me. I'm not sure. But the Pshat he says is still different than Rashi, because Rashi, first of all, Rashi understands that the word minchasim is going on the Ketores, and that perhaps it's talking about all 250 people. And I think that's the Pashtus in Rashi. Why he chooses not to understand it that way, I'm not 100% sure. But clearly, his own Pshat that is going on the Chanukah Samizbeach of the Nesiim is a different Pshat from what Rashi is saying over here. Truth is, this Rabbeinu B'chai gives you, I think, a new insight into a famous Rashi, which we all know. There's a definition of famous. Famous Rashi, which we all know, in the beginning of Parshas Baaloscha, that describes how Aaron HaKohen sees the Nesiim bringing their respective karbonos, and Nefesh HaDaito, you know, he becomes very perturbed. He says, you know, I have no chelek. Our Shevet Levi had no chelek in the karbonos of the Chanukah HaMishkan. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Shalcha Gadol Mishelohem, don't worry, I'm giving you something even bigger than what the Nesiim have. You have the menorah that's going to be L'dorei Doros. So when we say over that pshat, that Rashi, we usually focus on the fact that the menorah was so great. The famous Ramban over there, the Ramban writes that the menorah in a sense is continued through the lighting of the Chanukah menorah, which we do every year. But the other part of that Maimer Chazal is that Aaron HaKohen really got very disturbed when he saw that he wasn't part of the Chanukah Samizbeach. Why? Why did it bother him so much? I mean, come on. Aaron HaKohen is involved with the Mishkan and the Avoda, you know, constantly. Right? So why did it bother him so much that Shevet Levi didn't have a chelek in the Chanukah Samizbeach? It was a one-time thing. You see from this Rabbeinu B'chaye that the Chanukah Samizbeach and the Karbanos brought by the Nesiim was so powerful that Moshe Rabbeinu was mamish afraid that would outweigh whatever schusim he had in this encounter between himself and Korach, that could tip the scales in favor of Korach. Now again, why that is, I don't know, but the fact that you see that it is, you see it from this Rabbeinu B'chai, right? So Aaron HaKohen justifiably gets nervous. He says,
you know, maybe he had an inkling of what was to come. Shevet Levi doesn't have this tremendous chus. The other Shvatim do. Right? And Aaron HaKohen says, even with all of the avoda that we're doing constantly, the chus of the Chanukah Samizbeach is something which is arguably, again, for whatever reason, I don't know, but arguably even greater than all of the avoda of the Kohanim and the Levim put together. Right? I mean, that's you get a little bit of a better sense of that from the Rabbeinu
Bechaya. I mean, you know, take a step back. Moshe Rabbeinu was going of everything.
Right.
The whole Mishkan was cleared out from him.
Right.
They wouldn't be able to bring Kavanas or anything. They wouldn't be able to have a Chanukah or anything. It wasn't for him. So, like, I find it astounding that the Swiss that Moshe Rabbeinu had could not outweigh in his mind.
Right. It is astounding, but that's what he says. In other words, you know, it gives us a heightened appreciation of the Chanukah Sanesiyim and why that's so incredible. It also perhaps answers the famous question everybody has: why repeat the Chanukah Sanesiyim 12 times when they all brought the same carbon? Right? You know, just tell us, here's the list of Nesiyim, this is what they brought, everyone brought the same carbon every day, let's move on. Right, and yet we have, you know, this very repetitive paragraph over and over and over again, 12 times. Again, perhaps part of the answer is, if you appreciated how incredible this Chanukah Sanesiyim was, you would understand why it's written 12 times over in the Chumash. Right? Maybe that's part of the answer that Rabbeinu Bechaya is helping us understand at this point. There's another fascinating Rabbeinu Bechaya, where he puts together a bunch of things that in a million years you would never think to put together, and that's why we have the Rabbeinu Bechaya. So in Perek Tezayin, Pasuk Chof Tes, so we know that Moshe Rabbeinu faces the people and he says, in Kemos Kol Ha'adam Yemuslim Eiler Ufkudat Kol Ha'adam Yipokit Aleihem. If these people die a natural death, lo Hashem shlochani, then you know God didn't send me. But if they die in a supernatural, miraculous way, the ground swallows them up. So that's a simon, that's a sign that these people have sinned and that I'm right and that I was picked by the Ribbon Shalom. So I'm going to start a little bit into that piece of Rabbeinu Bechaya in Pasuk Chof Tes, and I'm going to start on in the Shevel edition, page Kuf Yud Tes, the second line. V'nei ze emes nachon. Right, if you don't have the Shevel edition, it's about a third of the way into the piece. V'nei ze emes nachon l'fi apshat. Ki ru'uyin ha'yu l'onish gadol v'chomer bozeh. Yeah, look, it's no question that what the Adas Korach did was a terrible thing, and they brought this terrible punishment upon themselves. V'hem garmu l'atzim l'fi shamar b'divrei Moshe k'mar b'shchina. Now, if you rebel against Moshe Rabbeinu, it's like you rebel against the Shechina himself. They presented themselves as being fine Erlich Yidin, who were attached to our Kodesh Baruch Hu. Just get this Moshe out of the way. But, you know, the lesson of the Adas Korach, the lesson of this parasha, is that it's not just an allegiance to God, it's an allegiance to Moshe Rabbeinu. V'aminu b'Hashem with a Moshe Avdo. And if you leave out the Moshe Avdo, that's just as bad. That's very bad. It's up there with, you know, a lack of having proper emunah and devotion to the Ribbono Shalom himself. Notwithstanding that, but there are two major questions which you have in this parasha. Moshe shahaya roa neman shispalo yisoh kama pa'om kama aver shahosu ke'inyan maiseh ha'ege v'cheita meragel v'zulosam. Echlo hispalil aleim bekan ve'echlo hoyo machazirim lamutov. Very atshuva ola al hakol. I mean, what is the pattern of sins that take place in all of Sefer Bamidbar? The people sin, or for Sefer Shmos for that matter as well. The people sin. Moshe Rabbeinu gets upset at the people, but he ultimately davens to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and he brings about some degree of kapar. That happens by the Maaseh HaEgel. It happens with the Meraglim. It happens later on by the Nechash HaNechoshes, right? Even here in this parasha with the Ketores, you know, go and, you know, use the Ketores to stop the Magefa. You know, Moshe Rabbeinu's role is always to go and plead with HaKadosh Baruch Hu to avert the terrible decree in some way. So how come Moshe Rabbeinu didn't go and dive into the Ribbono Shel Olam to help the Adas Karach do Tshuva? Right? And you say, well, that's a formidable task. He was a formidable man, Moshe Rabbeinu. Right? In other words, he could have helped a Tshuva process take place. By the way, there's the Mashon, Masechta Brachos, where the Mashon writes, even though I can't force anyone to do Tshuva, right, Tshuva, Kovid Shemayim Chus V'Yerushemayim, so what do you mean? I'm going to daven for somebody to do Tshuva. Right, so the Mashal says, yeah, I can daven for somebody to do Tshuva. I can daven that the Ribbono Shel Olam will put them in a situation where they'll be inspired to do Tshuva. Right? Now, only they can be inspired. Only they can do the inspiration. You know, somebody else can't force you to do Tshuva, but, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu could make you walk down the street and find a flyer for a Kiruv Shabbaton, you know, which you go off to and you become inspired there. Right now, again, you inspire yourself, but he put the pieces together so you'd be he enabled you to be inspired in such a way. So why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu even daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help the Adas Karach do Tshuva? Especially once we've said that there were such great people on so many levels. They included the Nesiim. Karach himself was a great man. Couldn't there have been another way of resolving this without having them swallowed up in the earth? You know, couldn't they have sat down and just figured out that, you know, you're just wrong and you'll do Tshuva and it'll be fine? That's his first kasha. There's no such thing as an avera which is too bad to do tshuva. God's hand, his right hand, is always stretched out to receive those who do tshuva, even those who rebel against him. Minuye Hamilos Vasos Kirson of Lome Hashem Yisala Hoy Salom. Hay Evsha Lamosha Lasaislam Oshi Amir Bidvarov, Kipikim Chachom Gidolim Hoyu. Why does he have to have the ground swallow them up? Why did Moshe Rabbeinu go to them like he goes to Paro and says, you want a sign that I'm right? That we were picked, and myself and Aaron and everyone was picked by the Ribbono Shel Olam? Watch this! I'm going to turn this staff into a snake. Right? He's done that before. Or something else. Why does the oath have to involve the deaths of the Adas Korach? Just show them a sign that you're correct. And again, they're chachonim. They're l'shem shamayim, supposedly. They'll change. They'll do it. You know, they'll accept the siman. Mitol ha'osahu hayim istari eslom ki aru ha'kodosh anibcha l'maylos ha'kohuna. Just show them a sign. First kasha. Second kasha. Va'od imchatu mardu b'Hashem u'v'Moshe avdo. V'heim hamistad m'las v'n kol ha'onesh hazeh. Let's even say that we could answer that question. And yes, they're accountable for their own sins. Machatu aktanim hamutolim barisa. Shayu b'chlal ha'onesh hazeh. Ki'inin shikosuv. The shame of name of a tapom. The children die as part of this whole terrible ordeal. Right? That's the way he learns. It says in the pasuk chav zayin v'gei olu me'al mishkan kav dasavav dasun v'avir nafsu yafsu nitzavim pesach o'aleyem u'nesheyem u'v'neyem v'tapom. Their little children are together with dasun aviram, and they die as part of this whole terrible thing that takes place. Ataf mosai chotu, Hashem sadik lo yasa avlo. What are you picking on the kids for? She says as follows: V'av nomin bikashnu lahalom parshas over derech hapshat yikshar lenikolzos. From a pshat perspective, we have no answers to these questions. We wouldn't be able to answer these questions. Avol yikshar laholmakiyim bederech hakabalah haneemon. The only way to explain this. It's through the Kabbalah Ne'emana. Over here he means Kabbalah in the sense of a particular tradition which we have. What is that tradition? The tradition, says Rabbeinu B'chaye, is the idea of Gulgulin. This, the Sedra of Korach and the punishment of Korach, you can only understand through the idea of Gilgulin. Right? Now Rabbeinu B'chaye, we know that there's a big machlokas between the Gaonim, the Rishonim, yes Gilgulin, no Gilgulin. Rav Sadia Gaon writes, in the Emunos V'deos, some people believe in Gilgulim. Yeah, that doesn't make any sense. Rav Sadia Gaon writes,
Interestingly enough, the Baal Shem Tov, who certainly believed in Gilgulim, told people supposedly that he thought he was a Gilgul of Rav Sadia Gaon. So I guess Rav Sadia Gaon came back as the Baal Shem, I don't know, in order to show that there were Gilgulim. Okay, Rabbeinu B'chai is a tremendous champion of the idea of Gilgulim. Many times in his Pirush on the Chumash, he mentions that you could understand a certain element in Chumash that through the idea of Gilgulim, when the pasuk says Yechi Ruven v'al yamos, Ruven should live and not die. Zok there, what do you mean? If you live, you don't die. That's how it works. No, you should live and not and be zocher to not have to come back as a Gilgul in order to make a tikkun for a previous Gilgul where things didn't work out, right? And Kaino v'Chaino, he explains the many things in Chumash. He explains through Gilgulim. So here he puts together a fascinating Gilgul approach to understand the parsha. V'hinni romez ramozim shmana v'atodalecha. I'm going to give you little hints and you'll figure it out. Timso b'dor haplogo. Havol nivlo nalun ir umigdal v'roshu v'ashramayim v'nasu lon u'shem uksiv bohem v'zachilom la'asos. Right? It says concerning the people of the Dor HaFlaga, the generation that built the Tower of Babel, let's go build a city and a Migdal, a tower, and make for ourselves a shame, a name. And it says, V'zeh HaChilom La'asos. Right? Now, Zeh HaChilom La'asos is a difficult phrase to translate. It seems as if Rabbeinu B'chaye is translating the phrase as this was the beginning of what they did. Like heichel. Heichel means to begin. Right? Related to the word lahaschil. V'zeh hachilam la'asos. This was the beginning of what the Dor HaFlaga did wrong. Skip through Chumash a little bit. V'timso ba'anshei Sdom. When you look at the story of the people of Sdom, and in Parshas Vayera, how they basically surround Lot and his family and cause them so much grief, it says, the Anshe Ho'ir, Anshe Sdom Nosabu Al Habayis. The people of the city, the people of Sdom surrounded the house. Now, what does the phrase the Anshe Ho'ir add to that pasuk? V'anshei Sdom, nosabu al habayis. Sdom was the city, right? We know if they're the people of Sdom, they're the people of the city. So it says Rabbeinu B'chaye, incredibly, he's hinting at this, but just you connect the dots. What the pasuk means is that the Dor HaFlaga was reincarnated and came back as the people of Sdom. V'anshei Ho'ir, anshei Sdom, nosabu al habayis. Which people? The people of that original city, the city which they were building with the Migdal Bavel, in other words, the people of the Dor HaFlaga, those people are Anshei Sdom. You know, it's not, the ear in question is not just a synonym for Sdom, because then what does the phrase Anshei Ho'ir mean? Anshei Ho'ir means the people of that good old city, back at the end of Parshas Noach, right? The city of the Dor HaFlaga. They are the Anshei Sdom and Nosabu al Habayis. They surrounded the house in which Lot and his family lived. V'yomar aleihem, and it says, V'esho anoshim asher pesach habayis hiku basanveirin. They were stricken with blindness, the people of Sdom. Again, as we know from the pasuk. V'timso v'anshei Sdom v'anshei ho'ir. V'parshuso v'adas korach. Now, let's fast forward to our parasha. It says, let's just put the whole thing together then. It says in our parasha, Vayokumu lifnei Moshe. They came and they stood before Moshe. V'hayu roi lomar al Moshe. Now, you could have said, this would have been better to say, Vayokumu al Moshe. In other words, al Moshe implies they stood up against Moshe. Vayokumu lifnei Moshe. What do you mean they stood in front of him? So he says, Aval Ramaz ki hayu lifnei Moshe. Lifnei over here means not in terms of space, that they were standing spatially in front of Moshe, but in terms of time. That these people, this is their third time around. There's the same people who were the Anshei Dor HaFlaga
for the Anshe stone, who are now coming back a third time as the Adas Korach, Vayakumu Lifnei Moshe, meaning he understands they had already stood up from before Moshe Rabbeinu's time. This is the third time that this chevra is involved in something less than ideal. Umitnei zekra'am, and here's the kicker, he says, what are they called in the pasuk? Misiei ha'eda, right? Kriye moed anshe shem, the people of a name. Meaning, go back to the Migdal Bavel, nasa lanu shem, let's make a name for ourselves. Here they are, they made the name for themselves. Right? What's that?
They goofed,
right, but as we're going to see, three strikes and you're really out. I mean, that's all of baseball is really based on this on this Rabbeinu B'chayim, right? V'tirgum ya'onkulos, and you want more support for my ideas, this is Rabbeinu B'chayim, take a look at the Targum. V'yikach, right, it says V'yikach Korach, what does it mean? V'ispaleg, says Targum Onkulos, he separated himself. Same root as haflaga. That's the door haflaga. Rem is a door haflaga. V'hizkir kan ve'onshom. I'll give you another hint to this idea. Ho'inei anashim ha'im terakir. Dosan avirim go before Moshe Rabbeinu. And they say, what? You got to put out our eyes? Where did that come from? You got to put out our eyes? Who said anything about putting out your eyes? You know, where does that come from? No, so it says the Rabbeinu B'chayim. You want to scare somebody, you remind them of something that already happened to them. Oh, you want to get bitten by a dog again? Like you got bitten by a dog the first time? So, Dasan Aviram, as part of the Dor HaFlaga / Dor of Anshe Stone, know what it's like to be stricken by blindness. Because remember, they had their eyes put out, so to speak, when they were part of the people of Sodom surrounding the house. So they say, what, you've got to put out our eyes? Right? That's why they picked that particular turn of phrase. So how do you understand the reaction of Moshe Rabbeinu? La'av rachamon, to a merciful son. Shailo ben k'sio ve'eno no'i k'shura. He has a foolish son who doesn't do what he's supposed to do. B'tchila garbo. First time you yell at him. Sh'tiyo ma'keo mi'asto. The second time you slap the son. Sh'lishis mis'yayish minu m'shalcho bi'ad. Pisho. The third time you say, okay, look, you're not going to shape up three times. You're out. Hopefully... I don't know. Father and son, I hope that's not quite exactly what happens, but maybe a student in school, you know? Third time you set a bomb in the school, you know, maybe it's time that we give you more than detention. We actually expel you. Three strikes and you're out, he says. Kein dor aflodishuk shekosu bohem zachilom latos me also hefitzom. Right? The dor aflodishuk was punished by being scattered. Anshe Stom, Hikobis Sanveir. The people of Stom were stricken with blindness, which the Rebbe of Bechai understands was a permanent affliction. Meaning you could read the pasuk as they were temporarily struck by blindness to let Lot escape. But he understands, no, it was a punishment. They were stricken by blindness, and that was it. You know, they stayed blind. Vadas Korach Nevdu Min Ha'olam. And Korach and his band of men, that was it. They were lost. Right? They, two strikes, and you're out, right? So a fascinating way in Gilgulim. So just going back to the original kashas, why didn't Moshe Rabbeinu daven for them that they should do tshuva? Because they had their chance. You know, the first time you do tshuva, the second time you do tshuva, echtov yashuv, third time, it's too late already. You know, that chance is not given to them. Why were the children swept away in this terrible event as well? So the idea, one of the advantages of the idea of Gilgulim is it explains, Rahman al-Islam, when children suffer, because if the children are Gilgulim from those previous generations that actually did sin, so they're being punished, not in their role as children, as part of the Adas Korach, they're being punished, really, as part of their tikkun, for whatever, you know, had taken place during the Dor HaFlaga and the Anshe Stone. That's just the chickens coming home to roost in this generation over here.
So two questions. First of all, yeah. he's saying that Korach and Basavir, all these people in Parliament, the million, all from the previous.
Right.
Everybody. Okay. Perfect. According to what he's saying, then why were they punished with the sulfur? Why did Hashem Baruch Hu actually issue left them blind, and that's it? Why? How did the B'nai B'chai like extend? You take it a step further. So why did they get killed like that? Like he's not addressing that. If they were the
Kulkulim,
then why did they get
to actually
with the way they were killed?
The truth is, I take the Kasha and make it into a Teretz of sorts. In a certain sense, the destruction of stone and the destruction of the 250 men parallels one another in a very strong way. An Aish comes down from heaven and consumes them. Right? So there's a certain parallelism. You'd think they would have learned their lesson the last time around. So in other words, they were consumed, but they were given a third chance to come back and correct it, and they just they couldn't manage it. They couldn't manage to do it.
So according to Ben Lachai, then why was there two separate punishments? According to that, they all should have gotten fire, all should have gone through the ground. So why was there a punishment for Korach and Dasavira, and right, a separate punishment for...
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how to explain the differences according to the Gilgul
Pshat. Well, yeah. Doesn't it say that the mouth of the earth,
now here it's
created.
Right. So again, that gets back to the old questions for which we're not smart enough to have an answer. God knows that everything is coming down the pike, and yet He allows us to hear Chavshus. So, you know, He made this Bria, that the Piharis had the ability to happen already, Misheshis and Mebracious, but it was back then.
So, are these kind of seeing part of
of the Gilgul, right? And that's what would come out. You put the two Rabbeinu B'chayim together. I don't know. I mean, what I think is interesting, again, let's take the idea that Rabbeinu B'chayim brings out over here. Again, to really talk about Gilgulim, that's beyond my pay grade. You know, I can read the Rabbeinu B'chayim. More than that, I can't really tell you. But I think there's a very interesting connection. In other words, besides just the words with which he connects the Dor HaFlaga, the Anshei Sdom, and the people of Korach, there's a very fascinating thematic connection between the three, and maybe this is part of what the idea of Gilgulim is all about. The Dor HaFlaga, according to Chazal, rebel against the Ribbono Shel Olam himself in a very direct fashion. The Anshei Sdom are opposed to Avraham Avinu and the new religion which he's brought into the world. I mean, their attack against Lot is essentially an attack against Avraham Avinu. Right? So, the first round of these people is to attack Hashem directly. The second round, they don't attack Hashem directly, but they attack that person who is chosen by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to start this new religion. And the third time around is even more subtle. We believe in God, we believe in the religion, but just this particular representative of the religion we think is off. You know, we have our version of the religion. So comes Rabbeinu B'chayim and says, it's all the same. If you rebel against Moshe, you rebel against Yiddishkeit, and you rebel ultimately against HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Don't think that there's any real difference. It's the same point he made before. But the Gulgulim brings it out in a very beautiful way. Don't think there's any difference between Korach arguing with Moshe and the Dor HaFlaga seeking to pick a fight with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's exactly the same. A equals B equals C. Same people, and they just don't get it, no matter what. Right? So I think that's a very powerful idea, which is coming out from the idea of Gulgulim.
So nice.
Yeah. Meaning, there might have been people who were still alive from the Dor HaFlaga by the time
A few years before then,
It wasn't so long before.
What is the
kasha
about children dying when we say that the children do die?
Right. So I don't have any good answers for any of those questions. But again, I think what it does bring out, again, beyond what he says in Gulgulim, I'm not going to pretend to understand. Right. But in other words, the yisod, I think, that he's bringing out is to help us by drawing the line with the Gulgulim. He's helping us understand that to be part of the Adas Korach is ultimately is the same Yisod as being part of the Dor HaFlaka. There isn't really a difference. You know, you want to argue with Moshe, you want to argue with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's the same idea. So, you know, how the details of all the Gulgulim work out, I don't know. Again, like I said, that's beyond my pay grade. I don't know how that works out. But you know, the Yisod which comes out of it, I think, is something that certainly we can relate to and understand on a much more basic level.
Okay, when Moshe Rabbeinu came down from Sinai, bought the whole Torah.
Yeah.
They had some time to learn it. They obviously must know what it said in Parak Yavis about the Pi'aretz. It wasn't a secret. So weren't they expecting?
No, but that's the kasha you asked. So. Forget about what it says in Pirkei Avos. Didn't they read Parshas Korach? You know, didn't they read the end of the story? Right. So I'll correct it. So what it means that Moshe Rabbeinu got the Torah at Har Sinai. He got all the dinim at Har Sinai. But you know, these parshios weren't written down until after they happened. You know, again, and that's the machlokas you have the Gemara and Gittin, whether we're written down Megillah gradually over the course of the time they were in the Midbar, that we're written down at the very end. But it's not mistabra that Moshe Rabbeinu comes down from Har Sinai and there's this sefer that tells you the end of the story before it happens. What's that? Right. You know, so what's going to happen? We'll just take a look at Parshas Korach and see what happens. Very not mistabra that they had Parshas Korach before Korach happened. No, but I'm saying, so Luchara, the same way they didn't have a Parshas Korach, they didn't have that teaching about the Pi'ah Aretz. You know, that was something which was only revealed at a later point in time.
The other thing is also the Rav said, by Sadoi, it says, Ashes said, Moi, Vachatoi, Moi, Lashem.
Right.
Lashem, Moi. So maybe we can say that the Rav said that they were fighting against Avraham Avinu. So you can see that Avraham Avinu is representing the Rabbi Nishalam, so maybe
right.
That's how you
right, 100%. Yeah. No, I was not. Okay, we will pick up next week. Rez Hashem, wish everybody a good Shabbos.